to a special episode of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Joey Moser, and I am joined by the director of the shortlisted live-action short film Extremist, Alexander Malachnikov. Malachnikov's film feels both like a non-fiction film and an adaptation of a real-life event, as he chronicles the shocking imprisonment of Sasha Svatulenko, a Russian musician and artist, arrested for replacing press tags with anti-war messages against Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. It's a film pulsating with tremendous life and passion with an unbelievable ending. The film is currently streaming on the New Yorker's YouTube channel. Enjoy Malachnikov's film before tuning into our conversation. Let's get right to it.
I just kept thinking about the sentence that is on the sticker that she puts in the shop. And it's just like a simple, it's a simple fact. And I guess I...
Yeah. It's a great 511. Got it.
I'm here.
I guess I just wondered if there was any part of you in the creation of the movie, if you were ever scared to make it.
Well, not for myself, for sure, because I knew before I started making it that I will not come back. Because honestly, 2.5 years ago, 2.5 years before I started filming, I realized that there is no way back to Russia because a draft started, which actually is in the movie also. When she looks out the window in a train, she sees people being drafted, basically, right?
Oh, that's I wanted to ask about that because I was curious about that moment.
Yeah, it's a little bit historically inaccurate, by the way, because she changed the price tags a few months before that. So by the time of the... But actually, some drafts started right away when the war started. So it's just like this more general mobilization of all young people happened in September, and she did it in April. But of course, I could be standing there easily. And in that sense, it's connected to me. And also... Because, I mean, I was always somehow, I don't know how to say it right, but definitely inside I was against the regime and hated it from the very beginning. Although I was only 10, but I remember my dad, or maybe even less, like 8 or 9 when Putin came to power. But my dad said, he's a KGB, never trust them. So that was said in 1999 when he, you know, first came to power. So I kind of always had a thought that something's wrong with that guy. I would go to protests and stuff, but not as heroic as Sasha, who literally sacrificed her freedom for what she stands for and what she is sure is true and what is true, what is on those price tags.
Yeah, I just think the with a lot of historical things that we are witnessing, especially in the last
3 days.
Yes. Well, Jesus. Yeah. There's so much that it makes me, when we see something, it's presented on the news now with social media. We see it all the time. We're bombarded with it. And then when people come back and they're just like, oh, no, this didn't happen or that didn't happen. I was like, we have eyes. We can see it. It's being replayed over and over and over again. You can't escape it. So the kind of things where they're just like, no, that didn't happen, or no, you're wrong, or no, they're crazy or silly. It's just like, all right, well. It's like constant gaslighting all
the time. Well, it is hard now, though, because we do live in a world of post-truths, because there is, AI now and all sorts of ways to create fake news. But I can for sure say that what she said in the price tag is true.
Yeah.
Because I have my stepdad, my mom's husband, is the bureau chief of New York Times in Kiev, and he's been to the places that she's writing about. Not all of them, but some. And whether the numbers there are precise or not, although I think it's pretty precise numbers, we definitely know that the Russian army has been bombing civilians all the time for all these 3 years. So, of course, she was putting out the truth in front of people who are shopping in the grocery store in the morning, which is a very interesting hack of the system, because although it has such a small outreach, and although it caused her such terrifying consequences for her personally, it is an interesting way to bring information right in front of people as they buy groceries in a store, when it's hard, I guess, for Americans to understand what it is living in a, with a propaganda TV, when there is not a single channel that is showing an alternative point of view. And everyone's very much coordinated with the present administration. Yeah. And there are like alternative internet resources, but not everybody sees them. And many people actually don't see them. And it was interesting because my generation, we thought that TV's passed, you know, it's gone. No one's watching it. The few more, like a decade, and no one will even remember what that is. But it turned out, no, that, that like the majority is watching TV and believing TV, sadly.
Yeah, I kept thinking about the moment where Galena sees it. And I don't know, it sort of felt like, I kept thinking about like what I would think if I would have seen that myself. I don't know, I kept thinking of like the noise inside the shop, me staring at this, it, you know, something like that is not supposed to be written on like a bottle. So I don't know, I feel like this, the sort of starkness of seeing it, even though we don't see it ourselves. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, but I think it's, you know, she didn't even complain on Sasha. She complained on the grocery store.
Yeah.
She sort of was a little rebellion herself in the beginning because she thought she should, you know, speak for justice because something's wrong with the prices.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about a little bit of a visual cue. Every time that I've seen it, I kept being struck by how much color is in Sasha's life. And I was doing some research, I found an article that had a quote from her after the prisoner swap when she was in Germany. And the quote is, "It's unimaginable what joy I'm experiencing. I really feel joy about everything, about trees, about grass, because in prison, I didn't have many experiences with my senses. So I touch grass, the land, and the trees." And I don't know. Obviously, we see her outside spending time with her friends who also share the same ideals as her.
Yeah.
That is contrasted very much with the, you know, the blue tones of the prison, even like the blue darkish tones of like Galena's apartment. And I guess I wanted to know how important that was to you to have that sort of bright, almost like the colors themselves are being rebellious, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. What can you tell me about like some visual colors or visual cues there?
Well, it was purposely done that the, her light before the arrest is very colorful, and we try to put as much visual, I would say, contrasts into the first scenes in the forest and in their apartment with a great set designer and the DP, Vlado Guy and Misha Kritchman. We went through the art that Sasha and Sonia did themselves, went through their clothes. You know, even though it's an inspired by story, we wanted to, you know, just see what their world was like. And even the t-shirts that Sasha, the real Sasha, wore in court, they were, you know, all those really psychedelic, very, very, very colorful and intense t-shirts. And we thought that maybe the world of their apartment is similar, and their friends are similar. And it's true, because when you go, when I went, I remember to the protests regarding Navalny in Russia, all people there were dressed, you know, there was a lot of colors. And honestly, it's true that people in the pro-Putin protests are all always in gray and black. I don't know why, but it's just some strange subconscious thing. I remember I went for curiosity. I went into the crowd of the pro-Putin protest, and I was the only person in like a colorful coat. So I thought it's important that the color sort of vanishes in the film. And in the end, it's only in the cage. It's like color is sort of locked up in a cage. Yeah. So thank you for noticing that.
Yeah. It
felt and then the very ending, you know, flips it upside down.
I mean, I'm sure every person wants to talk to you about the ending. So let's talk about the
ending. I love that you ask questions that are never asked, actually. Thank you.
Of course.
It's really because you get tired of repeating the same shit.
So the first time that I saw the ending of the film, I screamed. I quite literally screamed in sort of a very delightful way. I just thought, like, even though I told you about how the film has a very present quality and it feels very alive, but also I'm just thinking about that moment, like, it's very exciting. And I wanted to ask about that moment specifically in terms of tension of when exactly to do that, I guess, explosion, I guess you would say. So yeah, can you tell me about just, you know, it's a very orderly scene. It's very, you know, it's based on real life. It's based on probably transcripts and things like that. But I guess I wanted to know, to have such a big swing like that, what was it like to kind of create the tension before it actually happens?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we, first of all, we really didn't know what to do there and then.
Yeah.
And we did feel that we should flip the reality upside down from the POV of an artist, because Sasha is an artist and she sees any world, whether it's gray or whatever, in her own way. And of course we couldn't guess how real Sasha sees it. So we had the freedom of, you know, just fantasizing about what our character would do. But then on the other hand, we can't go too far away from the real person.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to kind of become her, I guess, in a way. But then we just went back to her speech, and she says in the speech, the real speech in court, which we took a big quote from into the film, I feel like this is all going to be a big prank, and you will all shout, it's a prank, and confetti will fall down. So that's a quote from her. And we went through all these options, like, should they dance? Should it be a musical all of a sudden? Should all those cops sing? Should the set fall apart and they're like all on the beach? We literally discussed it, honestly, and had, you know, brainstormed that. But then we thought of this explosion, and the tension was hard to build in the edit, to be honest, because sometimes it felt too spontaneous, I would say.
Yeah.
Sort of like so spontaneous that it feels like a totally different organic film. And sometimes it felt too predictable, and we kind of waited and set something up. And then I think we found the balance.
Yeah, I think we don't even realize, even if we know her story before we go into the film, or we like even do like a little research, it's kind of like, I don't think we realize how much we need that kind of release. And it is so, it is so unexpected and, dare I say, zany. Like, even the color of the confetti was delightful to me. It was just like really fun and unexpected. And I wish more filmmakers would take that kind of fun, absurdist kind of.
Well, honestly, to interrupt you, to me, it's the most interesting borderline in film. To me personally, I guess maybe because I come from the theater world a lot. You know, I love what Leo Carax does and Lovers from the New Bridge, or Holy Martyrs, because he really explores that borderline of realism and absolute fantasy, which I really love. And then, of course, not only him, we it's all over the place. And sometimes you have it in more realistic films, like in Kim Trier's Worst Men on the World, when everything stops and she runs through, or, you know, like Gondry films, I guess. But to me, it's very interesting. Actually, I mentioned Gondry, and I think it's more like Gondry's pure fantasy, or Guillermo del Toro is, or like Roy Anderson. That's an absolutely imagined world, you know, imaginary world. And then, I don't know, Panahi and lots of Iranian cinematographers are like pure realism. But to me, it's interesting to find that border when we really believe the reality, when we're present, and then suddenly it explodes and turns upside down.
Would you say even that maybe some, I mean, obviously it depends on the circumstances, but do you think that maybe more artists should lean into a little bit of fantasy when telling a real life story?
I think no, let me do it on my own.
Yeah. That's great.
Other artists should continue doing whatever they're doing. Yeah. It's just that I think this year to myself realized what cinema I want to explore and where I want to move, because although lots of artwork and filmmakers, you know, I love all they do, but sometimes like when I see the world as imaginary from the very beginning, I don't connect fully. And when it's pure like documental realism, I don't connect fully either. But when I don't know where the author is taking me, this is what to me is very interesting. And I'd love to, you know, in the feature that I want to do, I definitely want to explore that as well.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I even love that the confetti is like gold and red stars and hearts. Even that is, I don't know if that's a small detail that I really love.
No. That's actually also, thank you for noticing these little things, because they were all, you know, thought through. We did experiments of this confetti. We were thinking, is it hearts? Is it stars? Because everything means, you know, in a 17-minute short, everything means something.
Yeah.
And then people like you will come and say, wow, does that star, is that a six angle star? Is that Judaism? Is it a five star? Is it victory? What is that star? You know, I'm kidding. But the heart, actually, she, if you remember, puts on her cheek when they dance on the disco.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought of plotting that ending somehow earlier. To have it sort of, I don't know, somehow subconsciously prepare the audience, but not consciously prepare. Make it unprepared consciously, but prepared subconsciously.
That makes me want to go back and watch it again now. just to look at that. That's really awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time.